Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pharma Talk Radio. I'm Valerie Bowling, producer of the show, and you've joined our Clinical Air series, and this is episode number 12, Digital Startups and Applications for Clinical Research. Our host is Craig Lipset, Head of Clinical Innovation R&D, Pfizer. And he talks today with Mark Slaus, Director of Life Science Business Development at Oracle Health. Oracle Health Sciences, I should say. Craig, I will let you take over.
Thank you, Val, and good morning, and welcome everyone to flight number 12 of Clinical Air. I can't believe we have 11 episodes in that in the vault there online, on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio website and elsewhere. Well, my name is Craig Lipset, and as Val mentioned, while I am an employee of Pfizer and I have a few other affiliations, the views that I do share represent my own, not necessarily those of my employer or those other organizations. And the same is true of our guest today, Mark Slaus from Oracle. Now, Val, it is an absolutely beautiful day here in the New York area, but I'm going to see you in just a few weeks now at DPharm, right? We're about 2 weeks
in Boston.
Away.
Yes.
Wow, 2 weeks away in Boston. So this might be one of our last shows before we have a chance to see a lot of the different guests that we've had there at DPharm, get a chance to get some updates and hear a lot of new and exciting content. So I know I'm pretty psyched for that in 2 weeks. But for now, at least I have a beautiful day over here. I'm not sure what my guest has over there in Switzerland, but I'm really thrilled to have Mark Slaus as our guest for episode number 12. I think it is the perfect guest to build and follow on Clinical Air number 11, which is also posted with Don Jones, another digital health guru. And so hopefully you've had a chance to listen to that episode, and if not, after joining us today, you'll go take a click and pay a visit over there. But with that as a background, I'm thrilled to welcome Mark to Clinical Air. Good morning, good afternoon, Mark.
Good morning, Craig and Val, and thanks for having me.
So what does it look like out the window today in Switzerland, Mark?
Oh, weather is still fair. Not as nice as on your side, I think.
Well, that's one more reason why we'll have to get you to Boston for DPharm in a few weeks, Mark. But we only guarantee the content, not the weather. Mark, I've had a chance to follow you online and have a chance to meet you in the past, but help orient the folks that are listening, tell us a little bit about your day job at Oracle.
Yeah, so I'm part of Oracle's Health Sciences business unit, which focuses very much on solutions for clinical research. And within that unit, I'm part of the strategy team looking for acquisition opportunities, as well as opportunities for strategic partnerships. Now, that focused initially very much on adjacent solutions in the clinical space, but over the years, I've been spending an increasing amount of time looking at the broader digital health landscape, and I'm definitely fascinated by all the opportunities that that I see there. And maybe as background, I've been working with the pharma industry in a variety of different role since 96, first at IMS Health, then at Accenture in a life science practice, then a couple of years in a biotech company here in Geneva, and then moving on to Oracle. So going back to digital health, I think it's a very exciting period, and there are tremendous opportunities that can also help, bring great benefits to how clinical trials are being handled.
So, Mark, you've built up a pretty remarkable network. How did that come to be? What tools do you use or have you used to try to build up this network of followers, whether it's using social media or other channels?
So I think, maybe starting with the physical network, there are three main angles. Because a couple of years ago, I realized that in order to get a more forward-looking perspective of where technology is heading and where the industry is heading, it's great to get input directly from people who are at the forefront of innovation, and that could be, the one angle is the life science industry with the likes of yourself. The second angle would be entrepreneurs in life science, IT, and digital health, where I've built up a network with a lot of founders and CEOs of these companies. And then the third angle is quite interesting as well, which is more the investor side, so with globally present venture capital and private equity firms that have a live interest and potentially portfolio companies in life science, IT, and digital health. And because the perspective of these people is 5-10 years out, that's a great input for us as well to shape and refine our strategy. I think with regards to some of the content that you hinted at, it's quite a bit of work. It's a variety of tools, newsletters, Twitter feeds, Google alerts, as well as a lot of industry publications.
Well, I think that tends to be one of the biggest challenges for folks in this space, right? Is how do we keep tabs on all of the moving parts? I feel like every day people send me snips. There are headlines that catch one person or another. There's certainly a lot of different either news aggregators or other feeds that, I try to keep tabs on. There's interesting, other websites out there. But I think that for most, where digital health isn't in their day job, it's simply an area that they find interesting, it's a big challenge for keeping tabs. Is that the audience you were hoping to serve by pulling together content in this space? Was it to serve kind of the peripheral digital health follower who just didn't have the time or resources to aggregate content?
Yeah, so the newsletter I've been compiling for almost 4 years now on a monthly basis. Initially was really a tool for myself just to keep a succinct summary of what's going on, and also allowing me to go back in time if I want to track back what a company was doing in the past, then at least I have a record of that that I can go back to. So initially it was a tool for myself, and then I've been sharing it with colleagues, and then piece by piece I found out that there's a lot of interest among my broader external network as well for this information. So which is why I started sharing that on a limited basis with people I've met with or regularly speak with.
So Mark, when you Let's get into a little bit of the types of things that you're seeing out there. What gets you excited? What are sort of the attributes of a news story that may come across your desk? What are the elements that really spark it for you, that really make you think this is something that I have to include in my next newsletter? People really need to know about this.
Maybe taking a step back. First of all, a lot of what I see, I try to relate it to, the business I'm currently involved in, which is, improving the way clinical trials are being delivered. And then, if you then look at, the applicability of new digital technologies in trials, I think we can categorize that in a number of different ways, depending on what the purpose is of using the technology in a trial. And the purpose can just be increased trial efficiency and reduced cost, or it could be get better data out of the trial, or it could be, you know, a bit more forward-looking and in advance, like it's about, you know, delivering better value to patients, increase access, improve adherence and engagement. And then, you know, a step further would be where pharma is looking for solutions that will actually become part of the marketed product. So I think from a purpose perspective, there are different levels of, I'd say, sophistication and innovation. Then also looking at the types of data that are being collected. I mean, it could be, you know, just the same data, but instead of on paper, it's now being collected electronically. Or it could be the same data, but not collected at the site, but at home, a bit like the study you ran a while ago. But then it can also be about capturing much more data. So it's not blood pressure once a day, but it's 10 times a day. Or it could be completely new types of data that we didn't have before, like the example of activity tracking. And I think from a data perspective, there's then another dimension, which could be that these completely new types of data, such as activity, for example, might in the future be able to give us a much more granular and more accurate insight into what the real outcome is for the consumer, which could then also potentially lead to different endpoints being, you know, defined and applied in the trials versus what's traditionally been done. So there again, different levels of, I think, of detail and sophistication. And I think the third dimension that's quite important is the dimension of interactivity with the consumer. So technology can be just around serving someone with a questionnaire. It could be going a bit deeper into interactivity with reminders, giving people feedback on what they've been doing in the trial, but also, you know, potentially going forward, going deeper into engaging people on a continuous basis, motivate them, incentivize them in order to get the best results. So there again, I think there are different levels of advancement and sophistication, and then obviously the more sophisticated ones would potentially be the ones that I could get most excited about. I'll just throw in two examples that I find very intriguing. One is a company called Ginger.io, which basically uses the communication behavior data gathered with a smartphone in order to derive the mood and activity levels of patients, so which can be a great indicator whether, you know, someone is doing better or not. And this is data that can be collected completely passively, so people don't have to do anything specifically to get that. And this is something that provides a completely new picture on how people live their wellness or illness. And a second example would be another startup, a bit bigger one, and it's actually one that that Oracle has invested in and is partnering with, which is Proteus Digital Health, which has a solution in the around the theme of adherence. And I mean, as most people know now, therapy adherence is a major issue in normal life, but quite surprisingly, in clinical trials, the issue is almost as big as in real life, which of course has a huge impact on trying to assess the quality of the data that we're all collecting. And Proteus has a solution to have 100% accurate view of ingestion of medication. So these are two examples. I mean, there are plenty more out there, but I hope this gives you some indication of what I'm really interested and excited about, and what's really cool out there.
No, I think, you know, you're right on there with some of those examples. They're very exciting, and, you know, when you think about something like ginger or those in that category, that attribute of being completely passive, of not even requiring somebody to strap on a bracelet, but to simply do everything that they were already doing. And I think that, you know, there are times some coverage or some folks that maybe are frightened of the types of monitoring, though, that they may see or hear about. Are people ready from a cultural perspective from that degree of monitoring? I wonder, Mark, do you feel like these are mainstream enough yet, or do you think that some of this is still really for the highly enriched, quantified self crowd?
Well, that's I guess that's the question that that everyone asks. Many of the people in the life science industry, as well as many of the investors, by the way, everyone is sort of trying to figure out what the path to adoption is going to look like, and what the timing will be. And I think there are two. On the extreme, there are two ways of looking at it. It's either looking at the current status and then see all the obstacles, why, you know, like you said, why people might be afraid for the monitoring, why it might be difficult to include in the current business processes. I think another approach would be to sort of project forward, let us say 10 years from now. It's almost a no-brainer that all those technologies that we just mentioned and many others, you know, will obviously be applied to capture different ranges of vital signs, activity, et cetera, on a 24/7 basis. And, you know, we would just have that data, and it would not be only in clinical trials. It would be for regular consumers as well, probably. So the other way would be to say, okay, it is going to be like that in the future state. So how can we now plan backwards, and what's the, you know, what are the different pathways of getting there? Now, I think one of the challenges from my perspective is related to adoption of new technologies by the life science industry, an industry which, as we know, is not always early adopter of really innovative and new and sometimes unproven concepts, and looking at the ecosystem of solutions out there, I think the thing that makes it more challenging to get rapid adoption is that there are very few end-to-end solutions out there now. There are many components which in itself are extremely valuable, but I think, you know, if you allow me to use the example of the of your remote study, I think the challenge is to then having to deal with 4, 5, 6 or even more individual components from different companies, and then, you know, trying to put that together in a cohesive solution. So, which, you know, brings me to some of the discussions I have with the with investors is saying that, you know, I think many very valuable components are out there now to really transform, I think, both healthcare and life sciences, and we can narrow it down to clinical trials in particular. So I think there's a great opportunity now to start building more comprehensive solutions by consolidating some of the different players that are out there, thus bringing it, first of all, integration, facilitating adoption by, you know, allowing buyers to deal with one party instead of six, giving it more scale, more guarantee of staying power. And as well as, you know, the financial means to generate the necessary proof points. And I think that's something you discussed with Don Jones as well in the last episode, which might be the other, you know, element that's missing in some of these for some of these solutions.
So that's a great point, and I want to go there. I just, you know, I do have to share my, I mean, my personal feeling is, you know, some of these products, if we go back to that ginger example, are very smart and sophisticated when it comes to privacy and managing true consumer expectations around privacy. What's great about examples like that is we don't need necessarily all of the raw data. I love the idea that patients have a signature, and it's really about the changes in that pattern over time more so than any of the individual data that that one may need. But, you know, I think in that example and in some of the others that you were alluding to from the conversation last time with Don, that, some may feel that there's this this chasm, that we see lots of buzz and attention about consumer-grade devices, fitness devices, things I see in Best Buy on the store shelf. And there may be, you know, some, I think that there are a few different perceptions of what that movement means for really the life sciences and the clinical trial audience. Do you see a difference between the two? Do you believe in convergence between the two of the more consumer-facing sensors and devices versus those for use in a clinical trial?
Logically, yes. If we take a step back and look at the life science industry and pharma in particular as an industry, I think the notion of the real client being the end consumer is a very important one that is starting to find more adoption, and I think part of that is also is related to or will as impact will have the creation of solutions that are closer to what consumers really expect, and that in terms of consumer experience will deliver the value that consumers expect. So, and that can have an impact on dosage forms. It can have an impact on packaging, as well as of course different related services that that in the future will become part of the solution package for the consumer. So I think that then also will have an impact on, because it will force either the manufacturers of devices that are currently clinical grade but are very clunky sometimes and not necessarily user-friendly to adapt to a much more consumer-oriented design. And on the other side, I think the opportunity is probably big enough for some of the pure consumer-grade devices to maybe beef up their data management and security to meet some of the other requirements that they currently might not be meeting.
I think it is an interesting idea, though, that over time these worlds may converge. I know that inside of my own organization, at times we struggle with this notion that that we see these exciting shiny things. People are wearing them to the office. People are seeing articles and buzzworthy headlines that pop up about one tool or another. But for use in research studies, we like data, we like validation, and very often many of these consumer-grade devices don't even necessarily have a means to make raw data available to us. They're mostly in the business of post-processing data on the sensor and serving back something that's very distilled, very consumer-friendly, of a number of points, a score. I suppose there can be some use for that in the clinical trial setting if one believes that may correlate with something meaningful. But I think for most in the research side, getting access to raw data that one has confidence in may be much more powerful. But it opens up the world to a much smaller universe of potential devices.
Yeah, so I think there's probably something to say for both. I think the great opportunity there is now with all the new technology is that it can also bring a completely different level of detail to the table, where maybe previously you had one measure every month done at the site. And now you might have 10 measures daily or even continuous measures daily being done at home. Now, the question is then, okay, the device might be a little bit less accurate than the official clinical-grade device or not, because some are actually pretty good. But the additional accuracy and detail brought by the continuous stream of data, which allows you to, very precisely review trends and map it to things like ingestion of medication, et cetera, and correlation between the different kinds of vital signs, that richness might bring completely new opportunities versus the very limited amount of measures we had previously, which might have been a bit more accurate taken independently, but in terms of providing a picture of the evolution of the patient, it might not at all be the same thing.
Very good. I'm curious your thoughts on this. What do you think is going to really rock the clinical trial space in the next few years? What's not on the newsletter yet, but you're kind of sensing things are going a certain direction, and over the next few years it's something that we should really anticipate and start to really really bake into our planning? What would you caution or advise or get teams thinking about right now?
Well, so there are sort of three themes that I spent quite a lot of time looking at. I think the first one is, which you already hinted at, is really a much more consumer-focused and consumer-friendly trial. And that, can take many shapes or forms. And, I mean, you're obviously very familiar with that already, so I think it starts at engaging with populations of people who have an interest in potentially participating way before that's been done now, then facilitating the whole screening, selection, onboarding. As well as designing protocols that that better match their lifestyle, their expectations, and their preferences, and then I think to the extent possible, also delivering between brackets the trial to the consumer as much as possible at home, doing things like facilitating blood draws by not having someone travel 2 hours to a hospital, but doing it in the local pharmacy. I think there are some exciting blood analysis solutions appearing on the market as well that allow to distribute that much more. So I think the consumer focus is definitely one that will be key, and that will also trickle down in the final offerings that will get to market. I think the second thing, which I hinted at, it relates to the way trials are designed and the protocol, where I could see a situation where there's a lot more effort put into learning from everything that's been done in the past, as well as everything that's going on around the sponsor in the marketplace, to make sure that the protocol that's being designed is on the one hand feasible, but at the other side also sufficiently differentiated, so that in the end, you know, you're investing in something that will also bring a return on investment. I think the second element to improving protocol design really relates to the feasibility, and, you know, there again, coming back to the patients, I think it's critical. For some indications, it's more difficult than for others, but I think it's critical to really tap into patient populations at a very early stage in order to make sure that, you know, whatever inclusion exclusion criteria one defines actually can lead to a sufficiently large population, and, you know, something like what happened in the past, that a protocol is designed, it's shipped off to the sites, and the sites spend a lot of time and can't recruit, and then you have to redo everything, which really is a bit like the cart behind the horse. So I think that's definitely a second very important one. And I think a third one, but I already mentioned this, is much more attention to engagement of the people during the trial, and engagement is of course related to adherence, which is a very important component of that. And I could envision that, you know, there will be much more effort put into making sure that people are adherent, as well as that people, you know, potentially start working on certain lifestyle changes if that fits in the pattern of the overall treatment, and that patients are incentivized and compensated in a more effective way. And that, you know, money is difficult, of course, but there are other ways of compensating and incentivizing people. And I think one of the things Pfizer is doing about, you know, giving much more feedback is one important one. I think another one could potentially be the social aspect, where in many diseases patients can be very isolated, and, you know, have expressed for years now the desire to exchange much more with other patients facing the same issues. Now, of course, this, you know, needs to be done within certain boundaries in order not to impact the trial validity. But on the other hand, with all the social technology out there, it's to some extent also something that can't be stopped. So I think where pharma has a lot to gain in facilitating that in an effective and relevant way.
So a number of great topics there that could fill up probably a half a dozen other conversations, from improving protocol design and feasibility up front, making that more data-driven and getting that patient insight early, and finding ways to not only access it but bake it in, to improving trial access and participation, whether it's at unconventional locations to make the study more accessible, or the tools that can help support their participation in the trial. I love this theme of what I've seen at least one leader call digital phenotyping, but this opportunity to use digital tools to collect and capture data that was previously unobtainable, or at a level or degree of sampling frequency that was previously unobtainable. And, you know, very analogous to the type both of breadth of data, but the use of data around the genotyping space to really transform phenotyping of patients in clinical studies. And then straight through to those other concomitant interventions which may affect outcomes, which may not just be another pill, but could be a lifestyle change or another intervention which has data or may have data to support that it can boost outcomes, like the like an FDA cleared app for diabetes management, but to ultimately see how that works synergistically with your therapy, and to bake that into the development strategy. I think that these are there's a great continuum of opportunity that really maps and mirrors our own development cycle.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, you know, just as an example to the future impact, there was an interesting quote from Novartis CEO Joey Jimenez recently, who I think at a conference or an interview clearly said that, you know, he believes that in the future pharma will be paid on outcomes as opposed to selling the pill. And you know, Novartis is also a company that's doing some interesting things around mobile health and digital health. And I think this is yet another proof point that you know, people recognize it is going to be the future. Looking at innovations and adoption of innovation, I think there's always an advantage of being a relatively early adopter, as it gives you, you know, many opportunities to learn and refine your approach. So, you know, that will definitely also be my recommendation to our colleagues in the industry.
So one last question, Mark. I love provocative headlines, and I saw one the other day. It popped up in my inbox saying, asking if Apple is going to be the next big pharma, or is Apple going to displace big pharma? And I think it was a few weeks ago that the same question was raised about Google. Are they going to displace big pharma? Just provocative headlines, or do you see any truth or areas of concern behind those headlines?
Well, I mean, personally, I don't think Apple or Google are going to be the next pharma soon. Now, that being said, I mean, I could definitely see opportunities for significant disruption of the marketplace by players from potentially different industries. And you know, I think we talked a little bit about chronic disease, and you know, there are several chronic diseases where the potential impact of getting people to change their lifestyle might be bigger than, you know, investing yet another $2 billion for a molecule that has a slightly higher degree of efficacy. So there, you know, one could imagine that you know, someone with sufficiently deep pockets, and that could be someone from a different industry, like telco, like an IT company, or like a large private equity fund, would you know, invest and buy, like I said, aggregate some of those components to build a comprehensive monitoring and lifestyle change program with, you know, the right analytics and algorithms and incentives for people, and then complete that with you know, maybe, you know, one of the best in class generic compounds, you know, formulated and packaged in a very consumer friendly way. And then also invest in a decent size clinical trial to get the quantified proof. I think both in terms of quality of life improvement, as well as, of course, the cost effectiveness. And you know, I'd be willing to bet that for some therapeutic areas that might severely disrupt the market, and you know, one could imagine that they would be able to deliver better outcomes at a far lower price point than what traditional pharma is offering now. So that's, you know, that's definitely an interesting hypothesis, and I, you know, I would be very, very intrigued to see if someone would want to try that out. So that's, I guess, slightly disruptive. I think looking at clinical trials in terms of real disruption, again, I think what could be really disruptive is the notion of starting with the consumer population in mind, and actually, you know, in the future state, directly recruit patients, and then, I mean, do you still need a site or not? I mean, if people can have all their measures done at home, or maybe at next door's pharmacy, so maybe they have to see the investigator once or twice at the beginning and the end, but there's much less need for all these sites that are so, you know, sometimes very difficult to handle and that are, you know, it's a very time-consuming process. So there, that could be another disruptive one in the, on the trial side, is where it would be patient-focused. The role of the site would change very much. I think the way information is being collected and is being analyzed will change, and we could also envision a world where, you know, endpoints are quite different from the ones used now. So, two disruptive thoughts.
Well, you know, it's in the innovator's prescription and elsewhere that that healthcare is somewhat disrupted by retail clinics and other places that make healthcare more accessible. It shifts some of the places where consumers go. It's very natural to expect some of that shift to trickle back here, and or either for it to trickle or for us as leaders to proactively bring it into clinical trials and help drive that type of disruption that our space may need, given the challenges that it faces for sustainability and making sure we can continue to get those new medicines through a very expensive process of generating appropriate evidence of efficacy and safety for patients, for providers, for payers, regulators, and others. Mark, if folks want to stay connected, Twitter, other ways to find you?
Twitter and LinkedIn would be the two best channels to reach out.
Great. Mark Slaus from Oracle, thanks so much for joining. Hopefully we'll see you in Boston in a few weeks. If not, we'll certainly keep following you you online. Thanks again for a great conversation. Val?
Thank you. And Mark, how can people get access to your newsletter?
I mean, if you reach out to me via either LinkedIn or Twitter, then we can arrange that.
Okay, terrific. Craig, as always, thank you. Mark, a pleasure to have you. Thank you both.
Thanks.